Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to today's Football Times with me, Aidan Williams, and we've got a special guest this time from the world of football broadcasting. But firstly, along with me today are two of our regulars. To introduce those first of all, with me is Lewis Henderson. How are you doing there, Lewis?
I'm very well, Aidan. Glad to be back and not being the one being grilled on this episode. I'm glad that Abby's taken that responsibility off our shoulders. So yeah, not really looking forward to this
one. I don't know who told you you're not going to get grilled at all, so, you know,
well,
just hang fire on that.
I'm avoiding Scotland conversations as much as possible this episode, so, yeah.
Oh, come on, you should be celebrating them. They're in the playoffs, there you go. And also with us is Stephen Scragg. Evening, Stephen.
Evening, Aidan. Nice and early, I was in for this one tonight.
Just the 2 minutes late.
Just the 2 minutes late, that's pretty good by my standards, but yeah.
And with us too is the freelance sports broadcaster Abby Summers, who was all over a whole host of productions, frankly, from YouTube, notably the popular Don Robbie channel, to Live Score, Sky Sports Saturday Social just recently as well, Talk Sport, and probably a whole load of others that I haven't mentioned. And now she's on a These Football Times podcast, which surely, Abby, is the pinnacle. Welcome to the pod, Abby.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be on here with you. Thanks for being with me on a Sunday night. Lots of people like to chill on their Sunday night, so thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well, your broadcasting endeavours require you to comment on all sorts of teams and issues, but you are a Tottenham Hotspur fan for your sins, so yeah. It's quite a time to be a Spurs follower, I guess, at the moment with the recent managerial changes. So I'm sure you've talked a lot about this over the last week or two, but it's afraid to say we're going to get into it again, so let's talk Tottenham to get us going. Before we get on to Antonio Conte and what lies ahead, firstly, Abby, how did Tottenham manage to get themselves into the position where sacking a new manager after only 10 league games in charge was necessary?
Well, anyone who knows Tottenham Hotspur will know that they usually get themselves into these sticky situations anyway. Look, I think, honestly, Nuno was never going to be the right appointment. I think we kind of knew that from the get-go. He was like eighth choice, I think it was, in the summer, and it was getting very, very close to when that pre-season had to start. And I think they were looking around and thinking, we have no one else. We'll go back to one of the earlier people we looked at, ruled out, and then he was the only one kind of left. He was never going to be the right fit. You know, I think that when you go from having, an attacking, free-flowing type of manager with Mauricio Pochettino, that is kind of the ethos of Tottenham Hotspur. That's attractive, sexy football, as people like to call it. And then having someone like Jose Mourinho, where it was completely different, turgid, and then having someone like Nuno, who was more on the side of a Mourinho, but even more defensive, in my opinion, and actually less tactically astute. It was just never going to work. It was an underwhelming appointment. And I also think that when you had all the saga going on with Harry Kane, and credit to Nuno, I think he actually handled it quite well. And I think he seems like a lovely person. But when you're trying to get Harry Kane to stay at your club and trying to prove that your club is moving in the right direction, that managerial appointment, I don't think would really scream ambition for me. It didn't look like any other team were like galvanized and up for it, bar that first game against Manchester City, arguably the best display I've seen of them this season. But apart from that, I just don't think it was ever going to be a good fit, unfortunately. And, I think that the fact that he got manager of the month in August, it just shows you how quickly things tend to change in the world of football. We weren't winning games well. It was, those 1-0s that we were snatching, but weren't playing well and probably didn't really deserve them, to be fair, above Manchester City one. So I think that it was, the writing was kind of on the wall from early on. I didn't know how long he was going to stay. I didn't think he'd actually be sacked when he was sacked, to be fair. I thought Tottenham would stick with him a little bit longer, but I think they could see that this was going nowhere fast and they had to capitalise and change it before it was too late.
And yes, I mean, obviously things all change now and optimism is high, but Stephen, coming to you on this, was Nuno Espirito Santo, I mean, Abby's talked about wrong fit and so on, but was he given a proper fair chance? Or was he always on a hide and nothing given as Abby was alluding to there, the slightly farcical nature of the summer managerial search?
It was an odd one. I mean, he started so well. Three wins out of three. He was, manager of the month for August. And then to be gone by November, you know, that's a pretty spectacular, 60-0 in 3 months. You know, it's a complete about face, really. But yeah, he seemed an odd fit to start with. But given how well he started, you know, he wins this Manager of the Month award, and for suddenly it turned so sour so quickly, it was just a proper, the bottom completely fell out of it. You know, there was a somewhat seemingly underwhelmed reception for him. It seemed to be, looking from the outside looking in. So, you know, sometimes there's a managerial appointment and they're almost at a disadvantage from word go. They've got to do exceptionally well very, very quickly. And he did, but then it turned very, very sour. So, you know, to go from three successive wins to three successive defeats, you know, lose the derby, you know, you are losing kind of, you know, bonus points very, very quickly. And yeah, it was just it was almost like a season in 2 months.
And Lewis, on this for you, if we accept that his appointment was probably a mistake, you know, Abby was talking there about the ethos and so on and how it didn't quite fit anyway, but they kind of ran out of options, I guess. But if we accept his appointment was a mistake, was correcting the mistake quickly the best thing to do, like cut your losses and run kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so, especially because in hindsight, you can see they've got Antonio Conte, who, I mean, we'll talk about, but is, like, probably without doubt one of the best managers in world football at the moment. But I think, like, the problem with Nuno is he was set up to fail in just so many ways. We've talked about it already. He had no discipline going into the dressing room because everyone knows he wasn't first choice. A few mistakes and a few poor results, he was out the door, as has been proven. But, I mean, it was just so weird from Daniel Levy as well, like, coming out in the summer and, like, after Mourinho's gone, and I actually wrote it down just because I wanted to talk about it, the fact that he said that they were going to go back to their free-flowing, attacking and entertaining football, and then hiring someone who is essentially a disciple of Jose Mourinho, the man who they've just sacked. It is such a contradiction. And, I mean, you can't go from, like, as Abby said earlier on, a Pochettino. I mean, you think of Spurs, I mean, it might just be looking at it with rose-tinted glasses, but you think, like, that attacking and entertaining football, like Ginola, Hoddle, Waddle, even, like, in more recent years, Bale, for example, and then you go and hire a coach who is so, like, and you could see it in his last season with Wolves, the pragmatism of Nuno, and not as tactically astute as Mourinho. Like, that I don't really know what was ever expected from him to happen. It was to come out and say things like that, and then your actions are the complete opposite. It's just, it was always set up to fail. But I mean, in hindsight, and it's something that I'm sure we'll go on to talk about, doing it when you do eventually get Conte, who must have been a first choice in the summer, as obviously was sort of well talked about and documented, it is the correct decision to let Nuno go. It's just a bit farcical how it happened in the first place.
Well, before we get on to the new guy, one constant through all of this is, of course, Daniel Levy. So to come on to him a bit there, Abby, I mean, he's known for striking a hard bargain in transfer dealings. He's also the one who hires and fires the coaches, of course. Now, his track record on this, as we've alluded to there, since Pochettino, isn't exactly a ringing endorsement of his abilities. Now, Mourinho, I mean, he seemed like someone that Levy really, really wanted to work with, and obviously got that chance, but it never seemed an appropriate appointment. You're talking about the ethos. Again, it doesn't quite fit. But then to follow that up with Nuno seems equally inappropriate. So while he looks to have delivered, if you look over the last 20 years, I guess, his reign there, he's delivered elite managers now and again, but his recent mistakes, are they the root cause of their kind of regression from the position of strength that they had? I mean, it's only a few years ago, Pochettino was building and he reached the Champions League final. To to the position that Tottenham are in now, and you know, compared to most clubs, it's not a bad position. Let's be clear on that. But it's hardly what they were building to under Pochettino. Is Levy the one to blame?
Yes, I mean 100%. There's certain aspects you can look at Daniel Levy and say he's done very well for the club. You know, off the field in terms of making Tottenham Hotspur a big brand, a big football club, a big name. In terms of that sense, the training ground, the stadium, you can't take him away from it. And as a business, Tottenham is run incredibly well. However, you also have to take into account that Tottenham is more than just a business. It's a football club. And at the end of the day, it's about winning trophies. It's about enjoying your football that you're watching. It's about having stability on the pitch, about having success on the pitch. And unfortunately, Daniel Levy and Enoch have failed to do that. You know, in their 20-year reign, fantastic. We've got a great training ground and stadium. Well, you don't win an award for that. Well, maybe you do, but it's not one that we're going to be celebrating as fans, you know. And unfortunately, every time there's been along the road a time where Spurs are doing really, really well and they need that little bit extra to go to the next level, you know, I could go back to the days under Martin Yol, you know, under Harry Redknapp, you know, at that Christmas time, you know, in the run for the title at one point with Redknapp, and he brings in, I think, Louis Saha and Ryan Nelson, you know, when they needed that little bit of quality. And obviously with Pochettino. Now, for me, Pochettino had the hardest run because he was away from home for two seasons with the stadium. He had that whole transfer window with no signings at all in that summer. You know, and he worked miracles with that team. And we had lots of things that were good for us in terms of Dele Alli, 5 million, turning out to be a great player and gave us, you know, a good two and a half years of that talent. We had Harry Kane come through. Harry Winks was there. And we didn't really do much. But every time it needed to go one step further and take Tottenham over the line, we never capitalised on it, you know, and never sold at the right time. The whole thing with Daniel Levy is that he wants to hold on to things for too long. So the likes of Kyle Walker, when we sold him, that was the correct time. But that same summer, we should have looked to replace Danny Rose, Eric Dyer. You know, we sold Moussa Dembele right before, 6 months before the Champions League final. And most Spurs fans will tell you that was probably the difference of potentially winning that final or not, penalty aside. So look, there's many factors around why this squad has regressed so much, but it does always, you know, come back to Daniel Levy. Sacking of Pochettino, majority of people still think that it was probably a mistake. I think that he'd earn the right to get the sufficient backing he needed and then obviously go on and rebuild that squad to where he wanted to be, especially with getting them to a Champions League final when they had absolutely no right to be there the way that they were playing. And to kind of do that, for me, I think it was always that he saw Jose Mourinho as someone he always wanted, even going back to before he took over at Chelsea, you know, there was that little saga between them that went on. He wanted them back then and Mourinho said no. And I think that he finally saw an opportunity. Poch wasn't doing too well. Mourinho was available and he thought, well, this is a personal accolade for me to bring someone like Jose Mourinho to Tottenham Hotspur. But it wasn't the Jose Mourinho we had in 2004 when it, you know, when he first came to the Premier League. This is the Jose Mourinho of later year when we see him as kind of somewhat a dinosaur in his tactics. And we see it not just at Spurs. We saw it at United and now we see it at Roma that it's all kind of gone downhill. So for me, I think that was more of a personal gain thing than looking actually at the bigger picture of Spurs. But again, maybe he was looking at it from a financial perspective, a marketing perspective, because of how much clout Jose Mourinho still has in terms of all over the world. You know, people are attracted to looking at the club and what he's doing because he's such a character in football. But I don't see it as a personal thing for the club in terms of going to win trophies, especially when you see him sack Mourinho 4 days before a cup final, where arguably that's the only person you would probably want in charge for a final. So nothing really adds up for me, but it always comes back on Daniel Levy and Enoch, and they've got all the foundations there. They just have to match the ambition on the pitch, on the footballing side, and then maybe we'll have some success.
We say match the ambition there, Abby. So and you say most Tottenham fans would be quite happy if Pochettino hadn't been sacked. So is that a huge mistake then? Should he have given Pochettino the resources then to build from that position of strength? Is that possibly one of the biggest mistakes in the last few years?
I think so. That, in my opinion, there are some fans that say he had to go, you know, we weren't doing very well away from home. We hadn't won away from home in like 10 months or something like that. And I do see those points. Pochettino wasn't perfect. There was many moments in big games, Champions League games, where he made the wrong calls. Not talking about the final in particular, you know, games against Juventus, various other games throughout the years as well. And I think that he, because of what he'd gone through being Spurs manager and all those factors, you know, the away from home, the window and no signings, very, very limited budgets, and still managing to get Spurs consistently in the top four, you know, being in two title races, arguably they should have won a title or at least a trophy under him. I think he'd earned the right to, you know, have that reinvestment and see where the next cycle of this Spurs cycle go. So for me, it was a mistake. Obviously, we're 2 years down the line now, literally almost 2 years down the line to the day that he was sacked. And you have to argue, where would Spurs have been if they would have kept him? Surely not in the situation that they would be now. We've had three managers, if you include Ryan Mason, in 2 years. We've got no stability, Harry Kane wanting to leave the club. You know, arguably the signings we've made in that time have really made no impact. I'll take Christian Romero out of that because I do believe that he's a very good player. And I think Ndombele could be a great player if he could maybe play more than 60 minutes. But I think that if you were to weigh up what would have happened if Pochettino would have stayed to what's gone on in the last 2 years, I think that we would have been in a better position and in a rebuild again with him as the right manager who knows what this club is about than wasting our time on two managers who never understood what Tottenham Hotspur is about.
You mentioned trophy there, and that seemed to be the one thing that was held against Pochettino so much that he hadn't delivered a trophy. You know, getting into the top four regularly, getting to a Champions League final, for goodness sake, that in the modern world, this sticks a little bit in the craw for me as somebody who remembers the 80s and 90s and so on. But in the modern world, that is surely just as valid as delivering a League Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, we always used to take the mickey out of Arsenal that it was the fourth place trophy. But getting Champions League football is so, you know, important to a club, especially when you don't win trophies, to be able to attract the best players, you know, because you're in an elite competition. There's only so many spots and players across Europe that are in those. So by Spurs being in them, it made you far more attractive. You know, the money that was coming into the club as well at the time. And I also have this theory, if we wouldn't have moved to the new stadium, we probably would have won a trophy, if not the league, because we'd managed to make White Hart Lane such a fortress that unfortunately that move came at such a terrible time for us, because we really could have kicked on and done something. We didn't lose a game the whole season at home. So there were many factors, but I think that you're right in the sense that there was always that thing hanging over Pochettino that he didn't win a trophy. But if you look at what he managed to do with Tottenham, you know, turn them into an elite club. Everyone wanted to watch Tottenham because of how fantastic they were on the pitch, defensively sound, which never happened at Spurs. They got rid of that soft underbelly everyone always talked about. They were exciting to watch. They scored goals all the time. They played teams off the park. And unfortunately, again, like always, they don't get the backing they need and various situations come up. Whether or not he wins more trophies, I know he's won a few at PSG, but, you know, I'm talking about big trophies like Liga, I'm talking about Champions League, is another question. But I think you can't take away what he did for Spurs, because to keep them in that position with all the things that were stacked against him was a trophy, in my opinion, in itself, with minimal resources. But I do think that I'm sure we'll move on to Conte, having someone like Conte there, if Antonio Conte can't do it, well, I just give up. This club will never win a trophy again if Conte can't do it.
Well, yeah, we will get to him. But I mean, Steve, in terms of Levy and the managerial appointment, so there has been a mixture of big successes. Pochettino, obviously, but Abby also mentioned there Martin Jol, Harry Redknapp, and some terrific seasons under them, Redknapp in particular. But he's also seen the likes of Jacques Santini, Juan de Ramos, Andre Villas-Boas, Tim Sherwood, I guess, and now Nuno. So for a club with a lot going for it, there seem to have been more misses than hits in these appointments, do you think? Or am I being a bit harsh?
There is. I mean, to be fair, a lot of these appointments were the right man at the right time. Or, you know, they certainly seem that way on paper. You know, Jacques Santini was a very, you know, forward-thinking appointment. You know, it didn't last very long, but, you know, I think a lot of people sat up and really took notice of that and thought, well, hang on a minute, this is a very different Tottenham Hotspur now, and they mean business, you know, because we'd all come accustomed to Tottenham shooting themselves in the foot repetitively, you know, for a very long time. And you know, Tottenham being a watchword for, I don't know, just ineptitude. You know, the bad thing is about Tottenham is that, Arsenal fans aside, you know, no one's got a really kind of like, you know, bad vibes for them. You know, it's not, you know, Tottenham were, you know, for a child of the 80s, you know, Tottenham were, you know, stylistically, you know, very attractive to watch. And, you know, you couldn't not, you know, buy into Hoddle Ardiles, Ricky Villa and all of that. And, you know, people, soft spots are, you know, maybe a bridge too far, but, you know, people really respected Tottenham and enjoyed the football that they played. And, you know, I think that lasted for a long, long time. But yes, you know, these were appointments that Enoch, that, you know, Levy made, that made sense at the time. Yet for whatever reason, they just didn't click. It didn't quite work. And some of the sackings just kind of like, I don't know, it was a lack of foresight, a lack of patience. You know, modern football has that horrendous nature of, you know, if you've not succeeded, you know, out you go. But, you know, it seemed odd. You know, some of the sackings were just, I don't know, just belligerently wrong. You know, yes, I understand that the results had turned at times. You know, Pochettino, you can't really go from kind of like having a man that leads you to a Champions League final to kicking him out the door within 12 months. That just smacks of, you know, a lack of intelligence. You know, I get that need for kind of like results and results now, and you're judged on what you're doing right at that point in time. But there was a man that could have turned it around. Like Abby said, you know, what Tottenham could have done over the last 2 years under Pochettino compared to what they've done under a succession of managers now, you know, Burr's thinking about, you know, because that Tottenham that overturned Ajax that night, you know, a night after Liverpool had come back against Barcelona, you know, this was, you know, a football team that were, I don't know, on the crest of a wave. And that could have, you can't underestimate just how tough of a knock, you know, a body blow, you know, a blow to the stomach, losing a big game and missing out on a big trophy is. It does take 2 to 3 years to fully recover from that. But within that, you
I wouldn't
know
about that, Stephen.
you might find out before too long, though. You never know. But it does. It takes a bit of regeneration. So to sack your manager, just it's you know, it's cutting your nose off to spite your face.
And we also alluded to it, Lewis, as well, about the stadium. Now, this is obviously a huge positive in the long term, I guess. Well, in the short term, it's raised the profile of the club internationally, I guess, as well. And, you know, NFL being a big thing in Tottenham. As well now, but and longer term, I guess it'll be a huge positive revenue wise too. But has it? Well, I guess it has. It's hamstrung the success short term. Similar to we've seen this, I guess Arsenal is another example, had a similar situation when they moved stadiums. We've seen it time and again. Is it? I guess it's a silly question, really. But I guess it's the kind of progress a club needs to do. But it kind of hampers them in the short term.
Oh, it absolutely does. And I mean, we've sort of alluded to it. It quite possibly stopped Pochettino winning a title that Spurs probably deserved. There's the sort of famous stat about how they were the best team in England for a calendar year, and they really were. They were absolutely incredible. And I mean, the Arsenal comparison's a good one in terms of the short-term loss to long-term gain sort of thing. And it just sort of, you think of how well Pochettino oversaw that period of transition in terms of like the club and what they were doing. And Arsenal were clever enough to look at that and go, well, you need someone who is a brilliant enough manager to steady the helm almost and keep everything afloat, as Wenger did for so long at Arsenal. And I mean, it's a bit of an injustice really to Pochettino that he was clearly more than capable of doing that with Tottenham, and he wasn't given the opportunity to at all, because in the last 2 years, as we said, the progression could have quite easily, they would be in a better state than they are now. I think it's almost impossible to disagree with that. And I mean, it's, you look at some of the like the longevity, that squad needed a revamp. And I mean, you've seen it in so many other cases with managers such as, well, Wenger as well. He reinvigorated many squads in like his helm. Obviously, Sir Alex Ferguson was the greatest for that, really. You can't have the same squad for that period of time for 5 years. It was the same people. And that, at the end of the day, hampered Pochettino. And I think he deserved the opportunity to get real investment in that squad and create a second generation of it. Like, a modern equivalent would almost be the, if you look at Atleti and you look at Simeone, there's the first team that won the league title and the second one that won the league title last year. They're very different teams. And I mean, they actually come from sort of similar school of thought. The Bales are a train of thought, Pochettino and Simeone. And I think Pochettino could quite easily have oversaw something like that at Spurs. But rather than sticking by their man when in terms of Levy sticking with Pochettino, he sort of got rid of him at the first opportunity, which when you look at how loyal Pochettino probably was to Spurs, I mean, he was linked to Manchester United almost every week throughout his time at Tottenham. He still is, to be honest. And I mean, obviously, there was links of Barcelona. He'd never go there for his Espanyol links. But the point is that Pochettino gave so much to Spurs. And when he needed the backing of the club, he never got it. When he gave so much to the club in terms of that progression, while they did move into the stadium and that. And that's something that's really left a sour taste in my mouth when it comes to Daniel Levy. And something that, like, something I really do look down upon him for that, and his treatment of Pochettino, because I think it's quite rotten, to be honest.
Well, let's get on to the new man then. Juan Antonio Conte, formerly of Chelsea, among others, but also Juventus, Italy, and most recently Inter Milan. A real elite of the managerial game, as we've mentioned. But we've already mentioned the fact that he did apparently at least reject Spurs in the summer, but he's there now, which I'm sure has increased the excitement levels for Tottenham fans like you there, Abby. But he's only got an 18-month contract, I think, which to me smacks a bit of short-termism rather than, as we talked a lot there about the type of project that Pochettino was building or at least looking to build. Now, I've seen a few clips of you, Abby, on you've been on Five Live and so on, talking about his appointment where prior to his appointment, saying you hoped Conte would get the job. Now that he has, what do you make of him as Spurs manager? How do you see Spurs progressing under him, particularly though, given the fact that a little bit of a short-term view, at least in terms of his contract and how that might affect things?
I'm very happy that he's our manager. I think, I think Lewis touched on it maybe earlier on. He is a fantastic manager. He's literally in his prime. Has won things everywhere he's gone. I feel like I say this every time we have a managerial appointment, to be honest. But I think that he's just a fantastic coach. You know, he understands, what the task is. It's a very, very big job to come to Tottenham and work alongside Daniel Levy. I think Fabio Paratici is a big, probably pull why he reconsidered and decided he would come. Now that he's in a new place, he has a very good relationship with him, I think, from their time together at Juventus. So Paratici, from that aspect in terms of transfers, is going to know what Conte wants, what Conte needs, and hopefully he'll be able to actually get that for him. I just think that Conte might be in for a shock when he knows what the budget is in terms of where he's been previous, but I think that'll be an interesting one to look for in January or in the summer. It does only leave him with one major transfer window, which is the summer, based on this 18-month contract. I think there is an extra year extension they can trigger if they want to on that contract as well. But I'm really happy he's here. It's someone that's excited me. It's excited the whole fan base, the players. You can see that they're already excited. And he got a real taste for what Tottenham is like in that Vitesse game. I mean, I think they'd sold about 10,000 tickets or something, and then all of a sudden it was completely sold out. But it shows you the impact of, when you have someone that's exciting and you know the type of football they bring with them. So not only does he have, great tactics defensively, and comes in and shores up that defence. Christian Romero will be one of those players he'll really like at the back. I assume he'll be in a partnership with Eric Dier and someone else. But the fullbacks as well, we've seen him win trophies, with the likes of Ashley Young and Hakimi, Victor Moses and Marcus Alonso. So that gives me hope that he'll be able to do something with our fullbacks if he could get the best out of the likes of Victor Moses and Ashley Young and go on to win things. But mostly it's all about having talent in the squad. And for all the issues that Spurs have, there is a lot of talent still in there, Ndombele, Son, Kane especially. Holding on to him, maybe that will, gives Harry Kane something to think about, having a manager that's definitely there to win things. And exactly the way he's going to do it. And he'll be very open and honest about how he's going to do that and what his plans are. We know how he likes to set up in that 3-5-2 formation. Hopefully we won't see Harry Kane dropping into the middle anymore. And getting him and Son back in tandem, having Ndombele in the middle of the park somehow. He's our only creative spark in the middle there. So it's going to be a big reliance on him, hopefully, to put in that final ball, which Spurs have been massively lacking of late. Go through the lines, pick the pass. So I think that he's a great appointment. I can't quite believe we've managed to sell him on the idea of Tottenham Hotspur at the moment, given what's been going on. But I think that he obviously likes a challenge. And I think that if he can't win anything with Spurs, I really don't know who could. Because if you give him the tools, and hopefully they will do in the transfer windows, he can go on and win something. And I think that it doesn't matter what it is at this point. you know, finishing as high up the table is obviously very important. But if he can win a trophy of some kind this season, whether it's the Europa Conference League, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of it, I'll be honest, but, you know, you've got to start somewhere, an FA Cup, a Carabao Cup. There has to be something, and Spurs can't be picky. And I've always had this theory that if they win one and change the mentality, you know, of the club and themselves, then they'll go on and win more. And I think that he's the right person to change the mentality from the top down, because that's ultimately what Spurs have been lacking the whole time. They need to have that winning mentality and get some confidence back in themselves.
No, you're absolutely right. In terms of any trophy, it sets it in motion, doesn't it? I think, and you think of Man City and how their rise began with lots of League Cup success. Chelsea, I think, and similar going back. So, yeah, I mean, that's certainly the way. I mean, Conference League, I guess being the first winner of that would be something, wouldn't it? So that would be quite nice for Tottenham. That's probably, well, you know, Tottenham have got to be one of the favourites for that, surely, as it stands anyway. So, if as you say, if anyone's going to deliver it, Conte is the man. So maybe a bit of European glory for you.
I mean, it's only the Conference League, and I'm really not a fan of it. But so far, we haven't played that well in it. So we've got, I think we've got Mora next week, and then finishing off with Ren. So we've actually just got to qualify first.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Stephen, how about your thoughts on Conte? Will he deliver a trophy for Tottenham beyond the Conference League?
I think, as Abby said, you know, if he can't do it, then you might as well cut your losses and branch out into another business. You know, I think the great thing about Conte is that I think the last job he had at Inter Milan is a similar kind of thing, really. You know, they didn't have huge amounts of money to spend. It was a case of coming in, you know, assessing who he got and just kind of creating the best from what he's kind of like inherited there. You know, you look at Conte and there's always some kind of, I don't know, a kind of volatility around him, you know, to win what he won at Chelsea and then soon be out, you know, to almost walk out on Inter having lost the Europa League final and then to come out, you know, stay with them and win Serie A. You know, he can get results off, you know, what a limited budget. You know, I'm going to be interested to see what he can do next season. You know, he's got a free hit now without any shadow of a doubt. You know, next summer will be absolutely pivotal, not necessarily for him, but for Tottenham. You know, whether Kane stays or goes, you know, and within that, you know, I think him going might not necessarily be the worst scenario for Tottenham at all. You know, you can gain big money from him. And, you know, it's how that is invested. You know, I will strike a similarity to Liverpool cashing in on Philip Coutinho and then, you know, conjuring up Alisson Becker and Virgil van Dijk for the money. You know, football is, you know, this is Harry Redknapp territory in a way, you know, is the wheel and the deal. And it's how you construct your team. It's a bit of Tetris about it and putting the teams and the players together and, you know, making a sacrifice here and there for the greater good, and you know, one player, what can you get out of one player, and then whether that's them doing it on the pitch or getting them out of the club, and what you can do to, I don't know, upscale, regenerate a side. You know, it doesn't always have to be about, you know, having the biggest checkbook. You know, teams are starting to prove that it can be done. You know, Klopp's done it with Liverpool. You know, Simeone's done it with Atletico. You know, it's, as long as someone's got a clear vision of what they want to do, they know how they want their teams to play football. And what it does is it comes down to a basis of, this is my plan, this is my team, this is the framework of which my team operates, and here are the players that I need to make this work. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the fancy football checkbook signings of a Guardiola, you know, or Chelsea. You know, you look at, more so Chelsea, you look at how they throw so much money at that project from time to time, and then, you know, they'll swipe the ball clear. And, you know, there's a football club that probably stings by the fact how well Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne have done post-Chelsea. You know, this, you know, it's a different style of football. You know, Tottenham need to be clever, but what it is, they need to allow someone the time to be clever. And Conte's the man to do that. if he's given the time, and he's got the inclination to stay around. He's notorious in moving on very, very quickly. He is a footballing littlest hobo in that respect.
Well, we'll see how long he stays. I mean, Lewis, Spurs were, to be honest, poor ahead of Conte's arrival. Can he turn it around rapidly in terms of performances and how they play? I mean, he's only had a couple of games so far, but now I guess he's had a bit of a stint to work with what's left of the squad while some of them are away. How quickly can he implement his ideas? We talk about someone, as Stephen says there, who doesn't stay very long, typically anyway. So I guess, does that make him quick at implementing his thoughts and ideas on a team?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of Conte's legacy will sort of come in terms of what happens next season, because it is kind of a free hit this season. But I mean, if you sort of look back at all he's done as a manager, it is almost baffling how quickly he does make an impact on teams. Like the Chelsea he took over, for example, they finished 10th the season before. Obviously, Inter, they hadn't won a league title for 10 years. He was the one that started the dominance with Juve as well. Juve had finished poorly a few seasons in Serie A before Conte took charge. And I mean, obviously, these are huge clubs in Chelsea and Inter and Juve that he's turned around the fortunes very quickly. But he's shown that, and I mean, as we've talked about, Tottenham have some brilliant parts in that team, but they also have some parts that could be improved upon. And he has shown that he can do that too. Obviously, talking about Victor Moses, Ashley Young. But one of the things that I think is sort of underappreciated in Conte's sort of managerial career is Euro 2016, when he was Italy manager. Obviously, we sort of look at it now, and they ended up winning Euro 2020. So there's a lot of talk about that. Obviously, I'm quite happy to say that as a Scot.
Yeah.
But like, even in Euro 2016, that was a pretty poor Italy team, to be honest. And I think Conte really squeezed everything out of them that he possibly could. And I think for some of Tottenham's poorer players, like I think he'll do that. I won't necessarily say names, but I think there's some players there who are probably not good enough for a top four team. But as we said, there's a lot of absolutely fantastic players there. I'm thinking Harry Kane and Heung-Min Son. I mean, they must be sort of licking their lips and looking at even last season, Lukaku and Martinez at Inter, and thinking, okay, we can do some serious damage here, because they are two of the best forwards in the Premier League. And I mean, unlike Jose Mourinho, whose coaching is a bit old school in terms of there's not a lot of attacking discipline, Conte's sides do play brilliant attacking football, and I think that's understated. And I mean, I think if Kane can get back to the form that he has shown previously, which I think he will under Conte, Heung-Min Son is an absolutely brilliant player as well, and he'll be much the same. I think there's going to be a lot of change very quickly in this Tottenham team. And I mean, some of the flat performances that were there at the end of the Nuno era are going to be almost baffling, really, when you're going to look back in a few months and just see like the job that Conte's done. But I think next season is going to be the one where we look, and I'd be very shocked if he doesn't win something next season. Not necessarily he's going to win the Premier League, because I think you look at City, you look at Chelsea and Liverpool, and if United get the correct appointment, assuming that Ollie's gone by then, I think there's some serious opposition there. But I think Conte is just an absolutely incredible manager, and I don't think there's really anyone better to take on this project for Tottenham at this moment in time, to be honest.
Finally, Abby, we wanted to talk to you about your experiences of breaking into football media. So firstly, I guess, could you give us a little bit of a background into how you forged your career, the steps you've taken, and any stumbling blocks, I guess, you've faced along the way?
Well, look, we're still very early days in my career, so we've got a lot of things to achieve before I'm happy, really. But how I got into it, I always managed to have like some type of a platform from Twitter. You know, we all know that whoever loves Twitter is usually a football fan. I mean, football Twitter is, you know, renowned for being fantastic. And the way I started on it really was just accidental. I joined Twitter and I started tweeting my opinions, I think when I was like 15. I kind of just accidentally built a bit of a following. People obviously like to hear what I say and my opinion and things like that, and featuring on podcasts, mainly Spurs ones at the time, the Spurs Show, Last Word on Spurs, things like that, which have a really great platform as well. And then just, you know, kind of grew from there. And then the more I've got into it, you know, I've always wanted to, you know, be involved as a presenter. Growing up, I was obsessed with Georgie Thompson, who used to be on Sky Sports News. And that was kind of who I always wanted to be like. I was just obsessed with her. So that was the route I kind of wanted to take. I had a full time, I've still got a job that I'm now part time, my same job that I've been at since I was 17. So I did it the hard way. I never went to uni and got, you know, the degree I probably needed to go into the industry in the easier route. But I think that everything happens for a reason. And I've been very lucky that certain companies have been happy to work with me and reached out to me and seen what I've done and I've put out on social media and things like that. And, you know, are happy to give me an opportunity like Sony Sports in India, LiveScore, things like that, when I may not necessarily have been on, you know, big platforms at that time. And they've taken a chance with me, and I'm very grateful to that. Lots of stumbling blocks along the way, you know, being a woman in football, you're always having to prove a point that you know more than a man, you know, even if some men don't even know what they're talking about, to be honest with you. The odds are always stacked against you in that way. You know, I get quite a bit of, everyone's got trolls, I guess. Anyone that's got any type of platform and has an opinion, you're always going to get trolls, no matter how big and small. But I have to say, I guess if you've got trolls, I think you're always doing something right, to be honest with you. So, you know, long may they continue if they want to stick around. But there's a lot more positive, you know, energy that comes towards me than negative. So I'm very, very grateful and thankful for that. And hopefully my career just keeps going from strength to strength. At the moment, we're on a good run. And yeah, I love working and I love talking about football, especially. And it just comes very naturally to me presenting and hosting and doing things like that. So hopefully there'll be a lot more to come.
And you touched on it there about how you got into it in a non-traditional way, I guess, but has YouTube and other fan-led media and Twitter, I guess, as well, podcasts and so on, has that made the pathway into football media more accessible, I guess?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I've never been like a YouTube content creator as such. I mean, I obviously work with, you know, Robbie, who has AFTV, and they have another channel, which is called DR Sports. And I've kind of got into that since the Euros and thing and that type of route, which I'm really enjoying because I was never really a YouTuber and things like that. I didn't understand how it works and what really the point of it was. But there are so many amazing content creators that I've met from, you know, starting to work in that type of, you know, media world, and have incredible platforms and have incredible channels that they've built up from, you know, from the ground up, and they have so many subscribers and things like that. And I have to say, a lot of people nowadays, you know, younger people tend to watch YouTube more than they do mainstream television, which is so fascinating to me because it was a whole world I had no idea about. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and I think that, you know, it's a great way for people to get involved and get into it and, you know, have an opinion and put it out there to the world, because so many mainstream channels look at what goes on YouTube, to be honest with you. You know, another thing I had no idea about. So I think if anyone has, you know, a dream of wanting to be a presenter or be involved in football or any sport, have I lost you? I know that.
Briefly, no, you're back. You're back. Carry on.
You froze for a minute. I think that anyone who, you know, has a dream of wanting to be in you know, media in some way and didn't go down that traditional route of getting a degree in broadcast journalism or something like that, I think that if you've got an opinion, you've got a voice, you're confident enough in your opinion, and, you know, you can handle the odd troll that comes your way, I'd always, you know, say it's an incredible platform to go down and, you know, get that. You also get a lot of experience by doing podcasts and things like that. I've done many, many podcasts in my time so far, and I think that it allows you to speak freely. A lot of them are obviously not, you know, in front of a camera. A lot of them are, you know, you don't really see who you're talking to, you know, in terms of the public. So I think that if you're not confident, it's a really great way for you to start off in doing that. And then obviously as you get more confident, you know, going into the YouTube side of things, it's great. And just watching, you know, your own little channel that you've made from scratch build up, it must mean like so much to those people that have done that. And I think it's a great way to get into it, you know, when there are so many doors that are shut in your face if you don't have a degree and things like that, when you wanted to get into the mainstream. So I think that social media definitely in terms of those type of platforms is really, really beneficial, and it's been really beneficial for me.
Fantastic. Hopefully lots of people can take inspiration from that, because, you know, it's obviously a career so many people want to get into. It's hugely competitive, but I guess now more than ever is a time where people can actually take a bit more control of that than possibly was ever the case before. So more power to you.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Okay, so now a chance before we wrap up for my guests to set the agenda briefly anyway, to flag up a little bit of any other business, be it positive or negative. Stephen, I'll come to you first.
I would say this weekend, which was billed as Women's Football Weekend, which, you know, with an international break, as far as the men's game is concerned, what I've noticed is I think, less interaction for it than, say, comparable to previous years when these type of weekends have been utilised as being non-league weekend. And there will be a hell of a lot over social media of people at games, especially brandishing kind of like a plastic pot of beer that they can quaff at but near a corner flag at a non-league game. I've seen very, very little in the way of, you know, kind of like social interaction and people out there at games in what was supposed to be a weekend of embracing the women's game more widely for people who aren't coherent with it. I just think people can do better next time around.
Oh, very much. Very much so. I mean, yeah, I guess the more exposure it's having on TV will help. But yes, you're right. It's getting more people to go and engage with it when other options that people may choose are not there. But yeah, absolutely. How about you then, Lewis?
Yeah, a bit of a sober note. Just wanted to sort of pay tribute to Walter Smith, obviously passed away at 73. Obviously, being Scottish myself, I mean, that was... You sometimes see like celebrity deaths and stuff and like they really hit you. And Walter Smith was one for me and I just sort of stopped in my tracks and I was like, I don't know, it just sort of makes you think about your own mortality almost. Like, I know Walter Smith's an older man, especially I'm quite a young guy myself, but it's just like someone who you've looked up to in terms of all that he's done, like such a genius in terms of what he's done in football. But even out with that, you often see like the stories that come out about people after when they pass and stuff. And I mean, the stories about Walter Smith, it just kind of backs up what you'd think about him. A really modest, genuine guy. And I like to think of myself as someone who, like, one day I want to get into, like, journalism as a career, especially like, in football. And, I mean, there's a lot of stories from, like, younger journalists at the time talking about how Walter Smith would have their back if, like, older journalists and stuff like that were sort of taking advantage of them, being a bit rude to them and stuff. He would be on the phone or he would be saying things. And it's just... to hear he was a lovely man as well as all that he did for Scottish football as well. Something that I care about so much, Scottish football, in terms of the stature. I mean, he's built up so much in terms of what he did when he was Scotland manager. Obviously, after the Bertie Vokes stint, it wasn't great. He kind of restored some pride and there was the game against France, the 2-0. I mean, that's one of my favourite sort of memories looking back as a younger Scotland fan. But even, I'm not a Rangers fan myself, I don't support an Old Firm side, but you can only respect and appreciate all that he did for the Scottish game with Rangers. I mean, between the two times he was there, there's obviously he was so influential in 9 in a row. But obviously, but even when Rangers were going through all their money troubles and what would eventually happen, he took them to a UEFA Cup final in 2008. That is baffling for a Scottish team in that era. And I mean, absolute brilliant man, an incredible football manager, and all he did for Scottish football. And I mean, he'll truly be missed in the Scottish game and beyond, because he is one of the best British managers of the modern era, I would say.
Absolutely, yeah. Worthy tribute there, Lewis. And Abby, at the risk of triggering the Hertfordshire internet demons again, have you got any other business for us?
Do you know what? I was going to kind of echo what Stephen said, you know, about the WSL and things like that. It was a really big weekend for, there to be more interaction with it. I think that what we're seeing so much now is that they're pushing it on so many different mainstream platforms, which is fantastic. You know, ahead of Euro 2020, the Women's World Cup that's coming up there this summer, not the World Cup, the Euro 2020, sorry, 2022. So I think that, you know, all these things people need to hopefully take, some interest in. We've got a really exciting England team coming up ahead of us. So watching, you know, the games in the WSL are just going to get more interest and drive people to hopefully look forward to that competition that's coming in the summer, because we haven't got the World Cup till next year. And I think that there's been such a push in the women's game obviously in the last kind of like year or so, lots more interest in it and lots more traction because it's been on those bigger platforms. So I would have also hoped that more people would have taken note. But aside from that, maybe, you know, next international break or next weekend, people can hopefully look at it a little bit more. And also that it's a remembrance. They're still doing remembrance. Today's their remembrance. So that's one positive thing I'd like to see. I think that it's always really important that, we always pay our respects and don't ever forget, really. So I've been happy to see that as well.
Oh, absolutely. And in terms of the Euro 2022 for the women, I guess the last World Cup 2019 really captured the imagination quite a lot. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how it goes next summer for that, because I think with it being in this country, sorry, Lewis, in England, I should say, rather than the whole country, with it being in England, it has a real chance to capture that mood with England now under new management as well, hopefully moving on from the Phil Neville years, which had got a little bit lackluster, I think, and disorganised by the end. So hopefully positive messages for the women's team and the women's game going forward with that. Because, yes, the last World Cup, as much as it wasn't here, really did capture the imagination on plenty of TV coverage and plenty of focus. So hopefully more of the same. We'll continue to raise the profile. But okay, we'll wrap things up there for today. So thank you, everybody, for your contribution. Steve, Lewis, thanks both as always.
Oh, joy as always. Joy as always.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah, really enjoyed it as always.
And thank you very much, Abby. Really good to get your insight on Tottenham and more. Thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure. I'm so sorry about the Hertfordshire internet. I'll be straight on the phone to Virgin Media right now about how inconvenient their intermittent internet is.
I'm sure they'll be listening, Abby, so they'll be taking note of their bad press they're getting. Thank you, guys. And thanks to everyone for listening too. And do join us again next time. Thank you very much and bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.